I did not plan intentionally for this to be the text that we come to this morning. There's no way looking ahead that I engineered this to fall on the Sunday after like the most bitter, rancorous election in my lifetime. That's just God's sense of timing. And I love it because what this text is allowing all of us to do is to kind of hit the pause button and remind ourselves, what are my attitudes? What are my reactions and actions and words saying about and toward those that I disagree with? The months counting down to this election and the few days since, I think we'd agree, no matter where you land on the socio-political spectrum, they've been days filled with anger and hostility, a lot of division. Really, by any metric, we are a very angry and divided country. A lot of vitriol, a lot of venomous stuff flying around, and it's always about the other, isn't it? There are people that literally think today that not only do I disagree with this other party, but this other party is literally everything wrong with America. And they're terrified of this other group. They're not just against them. And there's a lot of fear-mongering and judgment going on. And that brings us to our text, which God just providentially planned for us this morning. Luke chapter 6, let's pick up reading in verse 37. We're jumping into the middle of a sermon that Jesus taught his disciples. And it begins, judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and it will be forgiven you. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. He also told them a parable. Can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but you do not notice the log that is in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, brother, let me take that speck out of your eye, when you yourself do not see the log that is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take out the speck that is in your brother's eye. This is the word of the Lord. And again, what a timely message. Jesus, in this particular part of the sermon, turns to the topic of judgmentalism. And he's against it. Jesus starts off this part of the sermon by saying, stop doing this. He uses a verb tense that doesn't just mean, hey, don't ever be guilty of this. It's a verb tense that means you're doing this and you need to stop. And he goes into a couple illustrations of how bad this really is. And this is kind of how we're going to look at this morning. I have five M's for you. And we're going to begin with the meaning of judgment. So as we look at that command, judge not, and everybody knows that command in our culture, what does that actually mean? What is Jesus saying? Number two, we're going to look at the mechanics of judgment. And that's the idea of how does this thing actually work? When we are judging other people or other people are judging us, what's really going on? Thirdly, we're going to look at the mindset, like where does that come from deep down? Fourthly, we'll look at the magnitude of judgment, which is how big a deal is this to God? And then finally, we'll end with the master over judgment. And that is, if we see judgment in our own hearts, and that's what I want us to do this morning, look at ourselves. If we see judgment, if we find judgment, and we wanted to master that in ourselves, how would we overcome something like that? So, again, we're all familiar with these words of Jesus. I think this is probably the most familiar thing to our culture today that Jesus said, judge not, that you be not judged. But what did he actually mean? I want you to note, first of all, he's not talking about the exercise of discernment. He's not. He's not saying you're going through life day to day, every day you're making all these moral judgments without even realizing it. You are evaluating things. You're making decisions based on the choices and the information that you have. And he's not saying that's bad. Stop exercising that kind of judgment. He's not talking about suspending critical thinking. He's not talking about this, you know, the modern tolerance where it's just relativistic. It's like everything goes. I judge nothing because everything is equally great. That's not the kind of judgment he's talking about. And we know that because John 7:24, the same Jesus says, do not judge by appearances, but judge right or righteous judgment. So he's actually commanding judgment, but he's saying, do it the right way. Do it by the right standard. So let's go on here. Jesus helps us understand what he means by judge by using a second word. Now, judge can mean a lot of different things, but the second word that he uses, which is the word condemn, that doesn't mean a lot of things. That means one thing. It means to pass sentence on someone, to find them guilty of something. That's what it means to condemn. So Jesus is saying, I'm not talking about you exercising discernment. I'm talking about a hypercritical, overly, constantly critical, fault-finding spirit. That's what it means to be judgmental. And if you look around at our culture, you know, we're not just making observations and evaluations to say, I need to understand my world better. I need to know how to come at these people and have a thoughtful conversation. And so I'm evaluating. We're not doing that. We are doing this. It's a harsh, it is a hypercritical, it is a censorious spirit that leads to harsh, hypercritical, censorious words and actions. So that's what he's talking about. That's the context. Now let's talk about how this works. This is the idea of the mechanics of judgment. And I'm getting all this from this illustration then that Jesus uses. And it's a funny illustration. It's an exaggerated illustration. He talks about these two people and he's saying, OK, I want you to picture yourself this way. You're walking around and you constantly are like, oh, I see a speck in your eye. And he uses a word that means like a tiny fleck of sawdust. You know, carpenter's son working in the carpenter shop. I'm sure there were times he got a little speck of sawdust in his eye. And it's irritating, isn't it? You know, if you wear contact lenses, sometimes you feel like you're dying, you know, and then you pull the contact out and it's this tiniest little thing. And that's what he's saying. He's saying you're going around looking for that in other people while you have an eye beam sticking out of your eye. And he uses a word there that actually means the main beam of the house upon which the weight of the house sits. Let's talk about how this works. I think he's showing us three reasons, in a sense, that judgment happens in the first place. The first thing is judgment views others through misplaced priorities. Now, if we're going through life and we are broken and we admit that, we are not perfect. We are fallen creatures. We struggle with our own flaws, our own weaknesses, our own sins. And we're going around through a world where other people are struggling with the same kinds of things. Then what should our focus be on? I mean, our focus should be on Christ. But secondarily to that, as we're applying what Jesus taught and seeing the sin in here and seeing the sin out there, Jesus' point is your focus, your priority should be on the sin in here. Because there's no way you can see clearly to evaluate and to judge other people if you're not keeping your own lens clean through which you view things. And that's what I mean by misplaced priorities. And you look at our world today, you look at even the church sometimes, and what we're doing is we're obsessing over the sin out there. And we hardly even notice the sin in here. That's a misplaced priority. Secondly, Jesus is saying that judgment views others through malformed perspectives. Now, again, he drives this point home with this ludicrous analogy. But, you know, if you're literally walking through life and there's something big sticking out of your face, your perspective will be thrown off in regards to everything else you're seeing. Let me share with you two ways that we do this, okay? Number one, judgment stems from the perspective that I'm right and you're wrong. It always stems from that perspective. You know, that's the baseline thing, is I'm right. Okay, and you look at the stuff that's been going on throughout this election cycle in our country, and it's really easy to caricature the enemy, isn't it? To make this cartoonish figure of everything that you despise. And you label them. And you throw these insults at them. And they're demonic. It's not just that they're problematic and we're problematic. It is going through life, pointing this finger and saying, behold the problem. And that's what everybody's doing. They're pointing away from themselves, outside themselves, and they're saying, there is the problem. Why? Because judgment stems from the perspective, I know I'm right. and I know other people therefore are wrong. And I was reading an interesting article this week by a journalist at CBS. And he had this revelation in the wake of the election. I was working on this point. I read this article and I thought, wow, here's someone who gets it. And what he's saying is, you know, for years, and he's like, I've surrounded myself with mainstream journalism. That's who I am. That's what I'm part of. And he said, we have always viewed ourselves as the intellectual ones. We are the progressive ones. We are the ones that understand what's wrong with America and what's going to make it right. He says, we just knew that we were right about absolutely everything. And he says this, looking back on this, he acknowledges it was a, quote, profound failure of empathy in the service of endless posturing. He said, we were always posturing as my perspective is, we're right. Therefore, we had no empathy, no compassion, no concern for the other. But he said, this thing happened this week as I listened to my peers and was in the newsroom and just realized I'm living in the middle of an echo chamber and everyone's saying the exact same things for the exact same reason. And they stereotype and they pigeonhole everyone who disagrees with them. They're the problem. We're the solution. They're ignorant bigots. We're not. And then he suggested two things. I came to the realization that we probably weren't as right as we thought we were, and that there are probably some redeeming qualities on the other side of this conversation as well. He said, I suggest two things. Number one, he said, our theme now should be humility. And then he called for repairing what he referred to as a shamefully limited understanding. Do you know what he's saying? He's saying judgment views others through malformed perspectives. And if we're going to start that the baseline is we're right, everyone else is wrong, he's like, you can't love that way. You can't go anywhere that way. You're just proud. And we need to be humble and we need to open up our perspective to see what other people see and to hear what other people hear and to experience what other people experience. I thought that was very insightful. And this is a sense of what Jesus is saying. If you want to understand how judgment starts in your heart and how it works, is that very often what we're doing is taking a very limited perspective and pretending like this that I see here is everything, when it's clearly not. Okay, so that's the first way we limit our perspective. Secondly, judgment stems from the perspective that I have the wisdom to discern another person's motives. Well, what an odd perspective, isn't it? You know, and you see that everywhere on the news. It's that not only does this person do horrible things that I disagree with, but it's now, and I know why. They do those terrible things because they're motivated by these terrible things, and they lay it out there. And the assumption is always, I am motivated by love and kindness, and I want what's best for our country. And I want what's best for the future. And to the degree that you disagree with me, you are motivated by all of the opposite things as me. You hate America. You're greedy. You're selfish. You're hateful. You're a bigot. And we apply all these motives to other people. And I want you to hear me out. There is no way. There is no way you know someone else's motives unless they told you. You notice the context, verse 31, by the way. The whole thing is in this context. 31 is the gold rule that we talked about last week. Do to others what you wish they would do to you. No one loves it when someone else judges your motives. So Jesus is saying in context, so don't do that to someone else. And by the way, I'll throw this out there. If your perspective and your priorities are off, you go looking for dirt on someone else. Guess what? You're going to find exactly what you're looking for, aren't you? I use this quote often with you all. We see things not as they are, but as we are. You know, when we're going to other people and we're judging them and we're saying, I know your motives and you did it because of this and you said that because of this. We're seeing that oftentimes not because that's actually what's going on in that other person or group or party. It's because something is going on in our own heart. This one commentator says this: judgmentalism is an unwitting revelation of one's own soul because people rush to condemn their own sins in others. The greedy delight to condemn greed in others. The ambitious charge others with self-ambition. Liars love to call others liars. Somehow, judgmental people imagine they will lessen their guilt by judging their sins in others. And this should terrify us. And what I mean is, every time we go out there and we claim this supernatural kind of clairvoyance of other people's motives, we're saying a lot more about ourselves than we are about the person we're judging. Going on here, Jesus also shows us that judgment works because it views others through manipulated proportions. And that's the last detail of this thing about the speck in the log. You ever notice how everyone else's sin is always more frequent and it's always more serious than your sin? I mean, nobody here is perfect, but we're better than those people. You notice how we do that? Like, well, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not saying I'm without sin, but I do know I'm better than that person. And what we have a tendency to do is proportionately diminish our own sin and say, well, it's an aberration. You know, it's been a tough year and I overreacted, but that's not who I am. And we look at the other and we blow up the proportion. We say, of course, that's who they are. And what a terrible thing. And this is how judgment works, that if we ignore the messy, broken stuff in our own lives and we operate out of this place of mixed up priorities and proportions and perceptions, we will genuinely convince ourselves that we're what's right in this world and everybody else is what's wrong. And if they could just get on the same page as us, what a great place this world would be. You know, and when we say these things out loud, it sounds absurd, I hope, to everyone. It should. But this is how we think when we've got that log in our eye that we're not willing to deal with. Now, let's go deeper, because I want to understand where this comes from. This is the mindset of judgment. Because we can look at it, we can say, OK, I'm doing these bad things. I'm saying these bad things. Even if you recognized it in yourself this morning, like, yeah, I tend to be judgmental. And you think like this, OK, I'm just going to do the replacement psychology. Instead of saying nasty, judgmental things, I'm going to say empathetic things and I'm going to replace it. And that's not going to work very long if you don't realize where deep down is that coming from, because that's just fruit. And we're going to come to this in this very sermon. Jesus is going to say that's just fruit. If you don't deal with the root of the problem, you're not going to change. So what's the root of the problem? Well, look at the context again. I'm backing up a few verses, but this is this sermon that Jesus is teaching. And I've split it up over 2 weeks, but Jesus did not. OK, he's sitting there one time with his disciples and he's saying in the context, love your enemies. And the last verse he just said was be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. And then he immediately says, and stop judging, stop condemning. You know what he's saying in context? He's saying judgment is the overflow of an unloving, merciless heart. Why do I have to say, be like your Father and stop doing this other stuff? He's saying it because this stuff doesn't look like your Father. This stuff is not loving. This stuff is not compassionate. And we have a tendency to tell ourselves that, well, the reason I'm judging this other group is because deep down, I really care about this person. I just think she needs to know what a terrible person she is. Let's just cut through the fog of self-righteousness. The reason we judge is because we don't love. We don't want that person or that group to experience God's mercy. Next, Jesus is saying judgment is the overflow of a proud, ungrateful heart. Again, right there in the context, verse 35, he says God is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. And what he's saying is you're ungrateful. You don't even notice what God is doing for you and you're sinning your brains out. And what does God do? He continues to extend mercy through the cross of Jesus. He continues to forgive. He continues to share graciously with those who don't deserve grace. And what he's saying in context is we should be able to say, I have freely received this gift from God, so I will freely give it to other people because I'm just one of the broken. It should be a lot easier than God, the perfect, giving it to me. But he's saying in context, the reason that we don't and the reason we turn, we receive this grace from God and we turn and give venom and judgment and condemnation is because we are proud and we are ungrateful for the gifts that we've received from God. Thirdly, this comes from the overflow of a hypocritical heart. Jesus uses this word, verse 42. To describe the heart of the person who judges. And a hypocrite is a duplicitous pretender. A hypocrite back in that day, it was a person who put on a mask and went into the theater and performed. And you all realize, like, this isn't really who this person is. They're the person behind the mask. And what he's referring to is very often as we go through life with a double standard, one for us, one for everybody else, or one for our group, one for the other groups. We're displaying an incredibly hypocritical heart. John Stott says we have a fatal tendency to exaggerate the faults of others and minimize the gravity of our own. We seem to find it impossible when comparing ourselves with others to be strictly objective and impartial. On the contrary, we have a rosy view of ourselves and a jaundiced view of others. And what I'm asking you to do this morning is simply be humble and introspective and say, yeah, I see that in myself. I see a double standard. I could be doing the exact same things as someone that I despise and condemn in my heart. And it's not that big a deal to me. I'm not broken over my own sin. I'm just broken over their sin. But I want us to be introspective enough to say, why is this happening? Where is this coming from in my life that I find it so easy to do the kinds of things that Jesus describes here? I don't watch Stephen Colbert. And I don't recommend that you do. But he said something on election night that I thought was incredibly perceptive. He said, how did our politics get so poisonous? I think it's because we overdosed, especially this year. We drank too much of the poison. You take a little bit of it so you can hate the other side. And it tastes kind of good. And you like how it feels. And there's a gentle high to the condemnation. Right? And you know you're right, right? You know you're right. That's incredibly perceptive. To say that deep down in our hearts, there's that lack of love. I'll take a little bit of it and I'll say a little bit of it because I do hate that other person. I hate what they stand for and I hate this and I hate this. And we have this whole list of things that we hate. And he says, we knowingly drink the poison because it feels good. There's a little high. And our party's like, yeah, way to post that on social media. What a killer meme. So we all think we're right. We're all proud. We're all unloving. And the magnitude of judgment, which is the next point I come to, is tragically we sit back, even in the church, and we think it's not that big a deal, right? This is in the category of sins like gossip and greediness, lack of generosity, lack of service, where it's like those are the acceptable sins in the church. We do those things. But, you know, adultery, you know, robbing a bank, what horrible things. But subtle condemnation, subtle jabs. Totally on the table. And I think we need to hear what Jesus says here, that if we're going through life thinking it's not that big a deal, everyone does it. Again, verse 37, judge not and you will not be judged. Condemn not and you will not be condemned. OK, what's the implication of those words if we continue to judge and continue to condemn? Just flip it around. Is that we will be judged by God. And if that's not clear, look at verse 38. He says, for the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. You use a measure of mercy and justice. You use a measure of love and compassion toward those who disagree with you, those who have hurt you personally. These are the kinds of things that come back from our gracious Savior. If we go through life judging and condemning and hating and despising and speaking ill of, that's what comes back to us. I've shared this illustration before. It's just an illustration. It comes from Francis Schaeffer. He's not saying this is the way things actually work. He's saying, imagine if they did work this way. He says, everyone's born with an invisible tape recorder hanging around their neck. And every time they speak a word of condemnation against someone else, like, that was a gossipy thing to say. What a terrible person she is. Or he's not even a good father. Look at him. It turns on, records that statement of judgment, and then turns itself back off. He says, now I want to fast forward to the end of time, and you're standing there in God's judgment. And he says, all God does, or all God would have to do, is reach out and press play. And just let your own words Just let your stream of condemnation toward other people evidence what you knew about God. And he says this, and I'm quoting here. He says, when the tape ends, God says, this will be the basis of my judgment. How well have you kept the moral standards you proved that you understood by constantly applying them to those around you? Here you've accused someone of lying, yet have you ever stretched the truth? You were angry at that fellow for being selfish, yet have you ever put your own interests above someone else's needs? You know, the bottom line, if we know God's standards well enough to judge someone else by them, we know them well enough to be judged by them. This is the main bottom line point, is that the judgmental person lives under the judgment of God. There's no way around that in Jesus' words. Now, I do want to be clear about what I mean by that statement. I am not saying that if you are going through life as a follower of Jesus and you judge and you condemn, that Jesus says, I revoke your salvation. I take it back. You're back under my judgment. And then we say, okay, forgive me. And he's like, okay, now you're not. Okay, now you are again. Okay, now you're not. Okay, now you are again. Now you're not. That's not what Jesus is saying. He's also not saying that those who otherwise would be under the judgment of God because they don't believe in Jesus can escape the judgment of God simply by being non-condemning people. What Jesus is saying here is something like this. He's saying, if there are deep-seated patterns of judgment in your heart, that is an indication that your heart has never been transformed by grace. So when that judgment erupts out of us, and erupts out of our mouths, and erupts out of our fingertips, because we're so good, we're like, I didn't say it, I typed it, boom, same thing. And when that happens, and when that comes out of us, that's like a dashboard warning light. See, the judgment itself, the condemnation itself is not the thing. It's saying something's happening under the hood, and you better pop the hood and figure out what that is. It's a dashboard warning light that says, is this showing you that you yourself do not get God's grace? You don't get his forgiveness of you, because that's not what comes out of you toward other people. That's what he's saying. He's saying if we're constantly going through life and it just occurs to us mentally to criticize and critique and judge and condemn other people for all their stuff, and that's just a pattern of living, he's saying pop the hood and what you're going to see is a graceless heart, because you have not received God's forgiveness for your stuff. That's why you are the way you are. Finally, then, how do we change? So if we see this to any degree in ourselves. Again, it's not a matter of, well, I said some really nasty stuff today. I wrote this nasty thing to this friend who disagrees with me and I bashed all her group. It is, now I need to say nice things. No, how do we change? How do we get transformation for what Jesus is talking about here? Well, look at verse 40. He says, first of all, he mentions the blind person leading the blind person into the pit. I'll come to that in a second. But verse 40 is the really weird one. A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Now, that's both a warning and a hope. Because here's the point that Jesus is making. His point is, right now, you are all being discipled by someone or something or some series of someones or somethings. Do you know you are putting yourself under someone's teaching? And I'm not just talking about me standing up here for 40 minutes on a Sunday morning. I'm talking about all week long, day in and day out. You are putting yourself voluntarily under someone's teaching and you're becoming like them. And the reality is, if your heroes and the people that you listen to are politicians who are filled with vile judgment and condemnation for other people, and that's what you listen to, and that's who's discipling you, you're an angry, judgmental person. It's not a surprise. If you are discipled by late night talk show hosts who make their living off of eviscerating everyone that they disagree with, I mean, you realize if that's your culture and that's what you do. I'm not making this big bash of television. But if you put yourself under people and you get cheap thrills because that person agrees with me, and man, that was a solid rip. Love it. So funny. It's not funny. You think God thinks that's funny when he's like, wait, that's a whole category of people that I created in my image. And yeah, they're broken. And so are you. And so are you. And you're going to make your living off of ripping just whole categories of people with a judgmental, condemning, hateful spirit. And that's who's discipling you as a Christian. Jesus is warning you. He says, when you're fully trained, you're going to look just like your teacher. Be careful who you let teach you is all I'm saying. But here's the hope. Who's Jesus talking to in the sermon? You have to go back several verses, but you see he's talking to his disciples. And really the hope that he's offering them is if you continue to follow me and listen to me and learn from me, guess what you guys are going to look like? You're going to look like me. See, the first thing here that I see about the master over judgment is that the master fully trains you. And I don't want you to picture just sitting under him like in a college classroom, just receiving information like, oh, there's more information. At some point, I'm going to have all the information. I'll be fully learned. No, that's not the picture. The picture, again, we've said this a lot because we're going through a gospel with Jesus, is that if someone's discipling you, that is life on life. It's not primarily information. It's primarily relationship. And you are being transformed in this relationship with Jesus. And what Jesus is saying to these disciples as a hope is, if he leads off by saying, stop judging, he sees this problem in his own 12. And then this bigger group of people that are following, he sees this as a problem. But he's promising them, if you come after me, I will fully train you. Now look at this picture in verse 38. Okay, what's this about? He says, give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. Now, question, what are you supposed to give? And what will be given to you? I mean, pastors love to parachute into this verse, right? He's talking about tithing. Amen. Offering plates can be passed in a little bit. You give, he's going to give back to you. And it's going to be pushed down, shaken, so it settles, overflowing. Yeah, you can't outgive God. I mean, come on, that's not what he's talking about in context. Maybe that's a distant application of this. But in context, what is he talking about? Loving your enemies, forgiving. He's talking about giving grace and mercy. So he's talking about saying, look, I get it. You have enemies. I get it. You've been hurt. But instead of judging and condemning, give your forgiveness. Give your grace. And I'll give more and more. This is not a work salvation thing. OK, that would fly against everything else the scripture says. It's not if you give grace to other people, I will see from heaven and then I will give grace to you. Like that's how you get saved, is by being a nice person. It's not what he's saying. I picture it like this. You're in that situation. Someone has wronged you. And it's a real wrong. And there's real hurt. And real fear. And your heart feels judgment. Your heart feels like condemning. And you go to your bucket of forgiveness and grace because you know that's what Jesus gave you. You know that's what you're supposed to give. You reach your hand in the bucket to give some and you're like, oh man, Jesus, the bucket is empty. I got like fumes in here. And this is what I picture is as you reach in to give something and you're like, I don't have that to give in this situation, Jesus. I'm too hurt. Jesus gives. You remember the story about the 5 loaves and 2 fish? It's a very graphic and real world way of illustrating what I'm talking about. It's like, Jesus, there's tens of thousands of people here. You want us to feed them with 5 loaves and 2 fish? I mean, the bucket's going to run empty. But as they gave, there was more. And as they gave, there was more. And as they gave, there was more. And I think this is the picture that Jesus is saying, if you'll follow me and sit under my teaching, first of all, I'm going to fully train you, which again is relationship. But secondly, the master fills you with himself. Because I don't want you to picture reaching in the bucket for a commodity like apples. Like grace is not like apples. There's 4 apples. I gave the 4 apples away. Now I have 0 apples. There's 4 graces. I gave 4 graces away. Now there's 0 graces. Grace isn't like that. Grace is the essence of God's character. So God is basically saying, I will keep putting myself in the bucket. And as you reach to give grace and forgiveness and patience and mercy with the people that you feel like judging and condemning, I'll always be enough for you. I will always fill you with myself. Finally, this is where this all leads. And a major point of what Jesus is saying is, ultimately, how do we overcome this judgmental spirit? It is the master forgiving us that enables us to forgive other people. You know, if we're trying to look deep within ourselves and find something that says you should be gracious toward those people who hurt you personally, or that gracious toward those people that you really bristle at absolutely everything you think they represent, you're not going to find it looking within yourself. But if you go way back a few thousand years ago to a cross outside the city of Jerusalem, and you see the Son of God hanging there, bleeding and dying, and why? It wasn't like Jesus was just bumbling through life with 12 idiots. And he was like, but they're lovable losers. So I'll go to a cross and die for them because, you know, I love them. Now, he sees every single thing those guys have ever thought, every attitude they've ever had, every word they've ever spoken, everything they've ever done, everything they ought to have done and didn't do. It's all there. And Jesus, the Son of God, says, I will not judge you. I will not condemn you. What's the cross about? It's about the Son of God being judged and condemned in your place. That's why it's so bloody. That's why it's so painful. That's why it's so deadly. It's because that's what my sin deserved. And Jesus is calling us here in these closing verses. He's saying, if you don't find it in yourself, of course you don't find it in yourself. But if you go back and you see someone who had the right and the power and the knowledge of everything to judge you and condemn you forever, and he took the condemnation in your place, and now he says, Romans, there is therefore now no condemnation to those who are in Christ Jesus. You will stand before the judge who knows absolutely everything. And he says, not guilty. If that's your master and he's fully trained you and he's filled you with himself and he's forgiven you, then how do you think you're going to naturally treat other people from the overflow of that gratitude for the forgiveness and the grace that he's offered to you? And friends, that's how we become like our teacher, is instead of putting ourselves under other teachers, either knowingly or unwittingly, by just listening to everything they have to say and falling into this kind of confirmation bias. I knew those people were that bad, because people will tell you whatever you want to hear. Your own heart will tell you whatever you want to hear. You put yourself before the Word of God and you say, God, teach me, disciple me. Help me to see Jesus in the pages of your word, and you transform my life. You fill my life so that the next time I'm hurt, and the next time, and the next time, as I reach in the bucket to give something that I feel like I don't have, you are always faithful to give. Pressed down, shaken together, running over the resources of mercy and grace to swear off of my own judgment and to come into the kind of mercy and forgiveness that Jesus modeled for us on the cross. Okay, Jesus will do that for anyone who says humbly, I need that. I want that. I trust you to do that. I turn from my heart of judgment and I receive your heart of mercy. Will you ask God to do that for you?